Hundreds of thousands of Quebec students are on strike today.
They're protesting against tuition fee increases. The students say that amounts to a declaration of war.
Massive student-led protests have left Montreal in turmoil for much of 2012. The upheaval caused by the protests and the government's heavy-handed reactions to them have divided Quebec society. While mostly peaceful, some demonstrators resorted to vandalism and blocked access to bridges and schools. Protesters were also met with violence from riot police, and accusations of brutality became a nightly occurrence. Desperate to restore order, the Liberal government of Quebec passed the emergency law Bill 78, which has effectively ended the larger protests. Hailed as a pragmatic solution by supporters who say it has rescued the city from anarchy, critics, such as the United Nations Human Rights Council, have condemned Bill 78 as an egregious violation of free expression. Gabrielle Nadeau-Dubois, spokesperson for the largest and most radical of Quebec's student unions, explained to Reason TV how a tuition hike of about 50 cents per day became the flashpoint of such broad-based civil unrest.
The universities of Quebec are the cheaper in Canada and the cheaper in North America also. And in Quebec, that's something that we are very proud of. It's because of those low tuition fees that we have the most accessible post-secondary education system.
Despite the lowest tuition costs in North America, Quebec also boasts some of the lowest attendance rates. Representatives of the free market Montreal Economic Institute take great exception to the protesters' depiction of the conflict as class war.
Quebec government, and that is Quebec taxpayers, pay anywhere between, say, 90 to 92% of, you know, the current costs of their studies. But what the protesters are saying is that they want Quebec taxpayers to pay for all the cost of all of their studies.
Quebec's student unions are modeled after labor unions, and they responded to the government's tuition hike with a student strike of all universities.
People have to understand that what we're doing in Quebec is a strike, not a boycott. The decision to go on strike is not taken individually. It's taken collectively by a general assembly. If you are a student, you are automatically a member of your student associations. So when the decision to go on strike is taken, the strike applies to everyone.
Far from enjoying universal support, the General Assemblies compelled many non-striking students into what they called solidarity by force.
The problem with General Assemblies, some students couldn't be there. Concordia University, for example, 500 students put 10,000 students on strike. It was not always a referendum at large. It was not secret ballot. So you really have an issue of democracy right there. Obviously, students want to go to their classes. They have been accepted in different programs for the year after. They need to finish the semesters. And they don't have time for protesting.
In Canada, the right to strike is a privilege, is reserved to workers. We went on a lawsuit and we won. Student that pays for his education, it's a service. He doesn't have to follow the decision of the majority.
Far from resolving the conflict, the strikers saw the injunction as an escalation.
All the students decided to fill up injunctions in front of the court to break the strike mandates and to force the go back to class. So then they had no choice but to hold picket lines in front of the colleges and universities to say, well, we have taken a collective decision and we have to respect it collectively. And the academic consequences of the strike, they will be assumed collectively also after the strike. The strike penalizes everyone equally.
I have no problem that people want to boycott classes, but they cannot enforce the decision by blocking the access to everybody because they're the majority.
Bill Watson, a professor at Montreal's McGill University, is critical of some of the tactics of the student movement.
People were gathering in their thousands and then marching in more or less random order on different routes every night. They've gathered in support from all sorts of people with all sorts of grievances. People from the Occupy movement, people from the anti-globalization movement, people from a more traditional labor union posture.
Even though it's, in a sense, a local fight against tuition hike, it's also a broader fight against the privatization of public services and against austerity-like measures.
The anarcho-panda is the alter ego of a junior college philosophy professor who's taken an unconventional peacekeeping role in the student strike.
The anarcho-panda spends a lot of his, I assume, paid time, because he's not given his classes. His classes have been suspended, but his pay has not been suspended, trying to bring police and opponents of the protests and the protesters into a better state of mind.
It's the kind of symbol that really disturbs the police officers, who are used to being very rough to the protesters. And when you see this huge panda in front of you, it's kind of disturbing because he's there with his big smile. wanting to hug all the police.
The students were victims of violence from the police fairly early on. As a teacher and somebody that cares for students, I started looking for ways to try to help the students with that. When the riot police shows up, I try to be there in the front line and to interact with them. They have a very strict behavioral protocol. They're not allowed to be human, essentially. They're not allowed to talk to you. They're not allowed to look at you in the eye. They're just there to be the sort of brute force of the system. By talking to them and by interacting with them, I try to remind them that they are people too and that they will be judged, both legally and by their own conscience.
But not all demonstrators were as pacifistic as the anarcho-panda. Incidents like the smoke bomb attack in the underground subway system and the vandalization of the Montreal Economic Institute's downtown offices marred the movement's preferred image of nonviolent civil disobedience. As protests grew larger and more disruptive, and as conflicts with police grew more violent, the government of Quebec passed Bill 78, an emergency law which suspended the university term, essentially locking out the strikers. It also banned masks during protests, introduced huge fines on protest organizers, and demanded prior notice of protest routes.
You've essentially got traffic blocked in unpredictable ways every night. And you're running a city. Other people are trying to get on with their lives. It's not unreasonable to require protests of more than 50 people to tell the police 8 hours in advance. That's all the notice you have to give. Look, we're going to gather here and we're going to go from here to there.
And for us, it's a totally unacceptable measure. Now the police officers will be able to say that you can protest, but not there, and you have to go in the field, and we want to protest in downtown. No, you will protest in the neighborhood away from everyone, where you are seen by no one, and where you disturb nothing.
The idea was to disrupt. It was very effective in disrupting, but I think a civilized society has the right to regulate this kind of thing and say, look, people who are not interested in this issue, who don't in fact agree with you, do have the right to conduct their lives in the normal way that they see fit.
In a democratic society, you should be able to protest where you want and to express yourself where you want and when you want. And that's a lot more important than any minor economic disturbance of a few hours in any downtown.
Canadian constitutional lawyer Julius Gray, a supporter of the student protests, explains the severe civil liabilities of Bill 78.
There could be a class action by some person that comes in and says, I'm a student, I wanted to go to my classes, and I lost $3,000. And if there's 10,000 of them, civil liability could ruin a student for the rest of his life.
Anyone who blocks the entry of an education institution can receive a fine of about $10,000 per person. If you are a local student association, it can go up to $50,000. And if you are a national student union representative like me, you can have up to $150,000 per day.
There was some justification in order to increase the amount of those fines because incentive matters. And if you have a particular action, which is blocking access to colleges, blocking bridges so that people cannot move freely, violating the freedoms of other people, and this particular course of action is costing you $1,500, you're not going to react the same way as if it's costing you $250,000.
This law will apply only for 1 year, and we are actually in front of the court to make this law declared unconstitutional. The Association of Lawyers, the Association of Judges, everyone has said that it was unconstitutional, so I'm pretty sure we will win, but it's going to be so long, and when we will win, the law will no longer be applied, and the government will have succeeded in going over the institutions that are here to protect the civil liberties and the civil rights.
It's probably a law that was not necessary. And so in that sense, it's maybe a case of government over-regulation.
The argument against Bill 78 is that most of the powers that one talks about are already in the criminal code. I don't see any reason to pass a law that forbids riots. I mean, riots are prohibited in the Criminal Code of Canada. I don't see any advantage. On the other hand, the civil liability, the delegation of powers, and the prevention of spontaneous demonstrations are serious, serious invasions of civil liberties.
Bill 78 was a panic move to kill the mobilization, but in fact, it had the exact opposite effect. Since Bill 78, we have seen hundreds of thousands of citizens, not of students, of citizens, each night going out with their pots and pans, banging on them to show their disapproval.
This bill is a direct threat to certain rights that all citizens have, not only students, to express their opinion and to freely assemble.
Quebec's universities are scheduled to reopen for class in August. and a Supreme Court decision on the constitutionality of Bill 78 is likely several months away. Though the nightly protests have continued in much smaller numbers, the student unions are planning another massive protest for August 22nd, where hundreds of thousands are expected to march through Montreal. It remains difficult to judge Bill 78 as a reasonable intervention for the public good or a draconian law imposed by a panicking government. Mass movements like the Tea Party, the Arab Spring, and the Occupy movement suggest a new paradigm of civil disobedience in the global zeitgeist. But the conflict in Quebec presents a dilemma that has yet to be solved. Where is the line between freely expressing dissent and depriving other people of their liberties?